Hi, and welcome to the Coco's 2D podcast. I'm your host, Mohammad Azam, and I'm joined here again with Stefan Eitherheim from Germany. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm great. Thanks, Azam. How are you? Let me guess. Pretty good.
Pretty good. And we have a special guest. Daniel Sperl is joining us today, who is the author of The Sparrow Framework.
Hello, Azam. Hello, Stefan. Cool. Great to have you.
Hi, Daniel.
Nice. So let me start by asking you, Daniel, when did you start programming in iOS? And tell us something about your background in programming in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I've done lots of programming in the past. And since we did our first programming lessons in school, which is quite some time ago, I think mid-90s or so, I really liked programming. And since I always loved playing games, I like to connect those two. So I think one of the first things I developed back then was some top-down Zelda clone, which of course was never finished, as it is always with such projects. But it got me started. And when I was over with the school, I went to the University of Applied Sciences in Upper Austria, where I studied media technology and design. Which is a kind of school where you have equally design parts and programming parts. So it's very interesting. You get to know a lot of different things and get an overview about the whole process. So it was really a great way to study. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that, I had my internship at Rockstar Vienna in 2003. And I helped programming Max Payne for the PlayStation 2.
Max Payne?
Yeah, it was ported by the Vienna company, Rockstar Vienna, to the PlayStation. They also did the port to the Xbox before.
So you were involved in the programming of Max Payne?
Well, in the port of Max Payne. Not in the original version, but the port of Max Payne.
Awesome.
So it's something that's always good to have on your... on your list of stuff you have done. but it's nothing big because it was an internship, so I only did very, very small stuff. So if I remember correctly, the main part I did for the PlayStation port was to check what happens if a user pulls out the memory card that was still there. at the moment when the system said, do not pull it out. So I think about 4 weeks of my internship was just checking if the game reacts correctly, if the memory card is pulled out at the wrong moment or pushed in the wrong moment. So it was not as interesting as it sounds.
Yeah, the things you need to do for, developing and publishing a console game, yeah. Cool stuff.
Yeah, it was fun and it was very, very interesting to learn that. But one thing I also saw at that time was that I don't know if I really want to work on such huge AAA titles, because there are so many people working on such a game. Really, there were, I think, about 50 people working on this port. And this was just a port. If you're working on a genuine new game, then it's even more programmers and designers and artists and the list goes on and on. It's just so many people. So what you're doing is really just a very small part of the game. So you don't get to be very creative. I think the only people who are really creative in such a game are the designers, of course. And the graphics designers and the game designers, but they don't do any coding or they don't do much coding, because they are more organizing the stuff that is beneath them. So I quickly saw that it's more fun to work on small games, on casual games, which was back then, as I said, this was about 2003. The market for casual games was not very big back then. I think even the word in casual games, this is something that emerged later. I think this was when Nintendo came with the Nintendo DS, and later on, of course, the iPhone with the App Store. I think up to that moment, there were just big, huge titles, and then there were independent titles, which were regarded not very highly, and people thought that you couldn't make money with such small games. So I was really, really happy to see that the whole industry changed the years after that to see that you can make money with casual games, and casual games are not a bad thing to do. So this was very interesting for me. And this led me to my second job after the internship, which is still my day job at the moment. I'm working at Fun World, which is a small Austrian company which makes games for coin-operated terminals. So it's casual games. It's games that are really just developed with one programmer and one designer, and the programmer happens to be the game designer as well.
Does he also do the art?
Some of the art.
Yeah,
not all of them. Cool. I'm not that good an artist. But I try to do some of the art. And yeah, it's very similar to what you're doing when you're creating an iOS game as a independent developer, because you have got complete control over your game. You from the first line of code to the release day, everything is under control, under your control. You don't have to ask anyone how this should be done. I mean, you can there's of course other processes that have to be done to have others play the game, check it if it's okay, get feedback, incorporate the feedback into the game, and so on. So there's lots of things to do, but it's all related to the game, and you have direct control over it. So it's very rewarding. And yeah, this is what I like to do.
Cool. So, Daniel, you said coin-operated machines. Are you talking about those machines that you found in the mall and all those areas, like game centers and the arcades?
Yeah, exactly. It's okay. Similar. It's just it's terminals where you've got, I don't know, I think 50 cents. You pay 50 cents or so per game or per two games.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. And then you've got very simple games like Spot the Difference games, or simple arcade games like Tetris clones and this stuff.
Okay.
So it's just for playing for fun.
Yeah.
And of course, this is not very profitable anymore because, the business has changed. People don't like to pay that much for a game they play just once at the mall or something else, or somewhere else, because they can play it much cheaper than that on their iPhone.
No. Yeah. Do you have any iPhone games released out there or in development?
I've got. That's interesting because this is also. I think this leads us to a question we wanted to talk about anyway. A few years ago, a friend of mine, Holger, and me, we wanted to try making a game for the iPhone. So this was late 2008. And as I said, the terminals from FunWorld have Spot the Difference games, among others, of course. But this is a game called Find It. It's one of the most successful games on that platform. So we said, well, we could we could work together with FunWorld. We can use the FunWorld brand and the Photoplay brand. Photoplay is what these terminals are called, and make an official version of Find It for the iPhone. So we made that. This was before Sparrow, and I think Cocos 2D wasn't even out back then. And so we
What year was it?
2008.
2008, in the middle of 2008 or something like that.
Exactly,
or later.
Yeah, about in the summer or autumn 2008.
Cocos 2D started in mid to late 2008, I think. Yeah.
Ah, okay, so it might be about the same time, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then at that moment, well, Find It is a very simple game. There is not much movement in the game. So we said, okay, we can do this with normal Cocoa. Also, not Cocos, but Cocoa. Cocoa Touch, yeah, thank you.
If you want to be perfectly correct.
Exactly, with Cocoa Touch. And yeah, this went surprisingly well because we had the luck that the brand Photoplay is still quite popular in Europe, at least in some states in Europe. And so we sold about, it was a 5-digit number of copies we sold for that game. And so we were very, very happy how this had turned out and said, okay, so this is interesting. We have to do more on that issue. And yeah, this was our first game, Find It. Then, yeah, we said, Find It was a very simple game, as I said, but for the games we want to do now, we need something that is faster than Coco Touch, and something that should use OpenGL in the background. And this was at the beginning of 2009. So we had a look around at the frameworks that were available at that time. And as you said, Cocos 2D was available at the moment, but it was not that popular as it is now. So it was still not foreseeable that Cocos 2D would be that successful and would be the one framework everybody's using. So we said, well, perhaps we can do this ourselves, because I like to develop such stuff. And what I had seen at that moment from Cocos 2D, I didn't like so much.
Why?
I don't know. Yeah,
something particular.
To be honest, it's been quite a time, so I don't know exactly what it was that that I didn't like. Perhaps it was more me wanting to do this myself. You know how this is as a programmer.
Yeah, reinventing the wheel, of course.
Reinventing the wheel. Yeah, we're doing this far too often, and we love doing that. So perhaps I just thought, well, this can't be good because I want to do this myself. So yeah. Might be. Anyway, I started developing Sparrow, and since the latest games we had done at FunWorld were using Flash as the framework in the background, because we used the games not only on the terminal but also on the internet. I was very I knew the Flash API very well, and I liked it very much, so I thought, this would be cool to have on the iPhone, because at that moment it was already foreseeable that Flash games wouldn't be allowed on the iPhone, or even if they were, they would not run very smoothly because Flash doesn't use the GPU. And so we took Flash as our base idea of how this should look like when it's finished. And yeah, so I started with the development of Sparrow.
Cool. So how much time did you spend in the complete, like, the development of Sparrow framework?
It's very hard to say, because as I said, it's done in my spare time. So I have a day job, and I'm doing this at the weekends, at evenings, and so on. So I didn't really count the hours of I'm working on it, but I don't know. It's hard to guess. It's been many, many hours, several hundred hours, of course, but I can't say exactly. And yeah, furthermore, it's funny. At the beginning, almost all work was really spent developing the framework itself, because yeah, there was nothing else to do. But the moment we launched Sparrow, the time needed to maintain it shifted. There was the homepage that had to be created, documentation to be written. Then I'm writing regular blog articles on the Sparrow blog with tips and tricks about Sparrow and on iOS in general. And this is taking up quite a lot of time. You can't underestimate that. And yeah, and as soon as Sparrow was used by more and more users, the time I spent with support was growing, of course, even so. Because the more users, the more questions come up in the forum. And I'd like to be there for the users as well as possible to answer all the questions that are when someone uses Sparrow. The nice thing is that in the meantime, there are a lot of guys helping me out in the forum, So it's not only me answering the questions, but there is a team of, I don't know, about 10 people who visited really daily and helped me answering the questions and write extensions for Sparrow and so on. So it's not only me. It's starting to become a community where others are helping out just as well.
Cool. Do you have a public source code repository where everyone can check in?
No. Or make changes? We are on GitHub. But currently, we've done it that way that I am the only one who can push into the repository or can commit code. Others can give me
pull requests.
Pull requests, exactly. Thanks.
Okay.
Send me pull requests, and I have a look at them and can integrate them into the code. This has happened a few times, but I'd like to have total control over the main repository. So every code that is integrated into Sparrow has to be looked over and added test cases for the code and so on. So I'd like to do that myself. Since we have got the Sparrow Wiki, where anybody can post extensions, there is a way to put code into the community without me having to have a look at it. So if somebody comes up with a great extension, let's say a joystick class or something like that, then he can push that into the extension system on the wiki, which is open for everyone. You don't even need to register. And yeah, then others can use it right away.
Cool.
So this has worked out quite well in the past.
Well, I have a question because I see how it worked with Cocos to the iPhone with basically one lead developer being the bottleneck for every change that goes in or out, for that matter. I was planning for Cobalt 2D to allow the GitHub repository. It's a team or what's it called? Company repository, something like that,
yeah.
where you can have an entire team working on the same repository.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And since I've already set up the continuous integration, which means I'll be able to, whenever there's a change in the code repository, I'll download it and my Mac will just compile the code and report on the status of that change. So as long as the code compiles, everything should be fine. And as long as everyone is making changes in the develop branch and not in a labeled branch or a master branch or the one that everyone checks out from, I'm hoping that this will help encourage more contributions and stronger growth. Of course, not every coding convention will be
followed.
I don't think in the long run it's not a big problem because you have to have several people contributing to such a big project. And I know this from my professional development. You have lots of people and you have a coding style, for example, but not everyone is adhering to it strictly. But as long as you have your own sort of module that you can work on, it's not really a big problem in the long run. It's much better to have those several people working on that thing
at
the same time.
Never say never. I might do this in the future.
I've never done it for open source either, there's definitely a risk that I will track who can join the GitHub repository, that's for sure, but so it's not for everyone, but at least some core developers can be very, very serious contributors.
Yeah, you're right. It's the great thing about GitHub is that you've got the branches, so you can just make a development branch and let the others work on that. So you have still got control over what then gets merged into the main tree. So I'm sure there's a way this can be done so that it works. But for Sparrow, I currently think that the system we have now is working. So I think I'll leave it at that for now. And if more people say they want to contribute, then of course I will have to think this over and perhaps change this.
You know when it stops working is when you spend a lot of time integrating other people's changes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, Azam, what's next question on the list?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just visiting the website, the sparrow-framework.org, and we'll have a link to the website in the show notes. It's an awesome website. I like the logo over there, like the sparrow and hatch your app.
Thank you.
Nobody calls me a chicken. Yeah, that's pretty good.
My friend Holger came up with the logo and most of the webpage. So
it's awesome. I mean, the credit to him. the graphic work is awesome, and the layout of the website is also very good, and code samples and everything.
Thank you. Thanks.
So the other question that I have is that I have used exclusively Cocos2D framework for development, and I've developed a number of games in it and deployed it to the App Store. How does it compare? Like, I don't know anything about Sparrow framework because I haven't programmed in it, but if I'm the Cocos2D developer, how am I going to find different things in the Sparrow framework? How does it compare? Like, how do both the framework compare to each other?
Okay, so as I said, I must admit that I've never used Cocos2D much myself, so I can't tell you much about the Cocos2D side or compare it directly to Cocos2D, but anyway, I think most of the listeners and you both know this side very well anyway. So what I can tell you is that the feedback I've got from Sparrow is that it's easier to learn and easier to use. So many people came to me and said, they downloaded Sparrow and had something up and running in a matter of an hour or so. So they said it's really easy to get started. Another thing is that if you have done anything with Flash, then you will really feel at home immediately because it's modeled directly after the Flash display tree architecture. So any object you've got in Flash, there's an equivalent object with the same name in Sparrow. So what I always say is, if you move to a new architecture or a new system, the difficult thing is not learning a new language because, the languages are really, programming languages are very similar, I think. So learning a language is really a thing that is relatively quickly done. So what's really hard is learning the whole new APIs and the whole new frameworks that come with the language. This is something where really, really much time is lost when you change your platform. So Sparrow, if you have learned Flash or if you have already used Flash, then you just have to learn the language, Objective-C, and you're done. There's nothing else you have to learn. You can get immediately started and use Sparrow. So I think that's a main advantage of Sparrow. So if you know Flash, then you can try Sparrow and see how quickly you get started. So this is something that sets us apart from Cocos2D. Another thing is that I designed Sparrow from the start to be as lightweight as possible. So that's not just the number of features, but only the amount of code, the amount of dependencies, and this stuff. So, for example, just before we started recording the podcast, I used a tool to check how much lines of code are in Sparrow. And this is currently below 7,000 lines of code, which is really, really little. And I compared it with Cocos2D, and this is 27,000 lines of code. So you can see it's just a fraction of the code. And granted, it does not as much as Cocos2D does. There are some features Cocos2D has that Sparrow doesn't have. But this has always been a deliberate choice. So I want to have Sparrow include only the stuff that is needed in all games. All other content should be moved out into extensions or should be very easy to add to the framework yourself. So I wanted it to be very easily extendable. And I think this is very important for an open source project, because the easier it is to get into the code as a developer, the easier it is to maintain and to make something with it and to extend it. So this is something I thought would be very important for such a framework.
No, definitely. It's one of the things that I try to do with Cobol2d is have a, a uniform way to add static libraries to the project so that you can build your own and release it as your own. And for every static library that is released by other users, it's the same process of adding them into the Cobol2d project. So if you have done it once, you can do it multiple times as long as the developers are following the same principle. And I think that's very important, because so far for the past 3 years in Cocos2D, it was like, I have this extra code here, I posted on the forum, you have to make your own classes, usually you have to tweak the code because it's not working out of the box. And you just throw it into your project, and next time you need it, you'll have to copy those classes to your next project, and so on. And well, if you've done at least a couple projects, 4 or 5, you'll end up wondering, where was that class again? I used it before, but which project? And yeah, well, try find it again.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's something very important. It's also encouraging if you have a very uniform way to encourage others to actually release their stuff publicly, if it's the, if there's a common way to do so. And I think looking at your extensions, there's a lot of them. Can you say which of those extensions are very popular?
I think the wait a moment, I will open the page up myself. One extension I did myself just I think 2 months ago or so was the particle system extension. So particle systems, this is something that has been on the to-do list of Sparrow for a long time, and this is a good sample of the difficulty of deciding if something should become part of the framework or not. The particle system is something that is used frequently, but not in all games. And furthermore, a particle system is something that's really very complex thing. You can use it for so much different use cases that it has to, for some use cases you have to build a custom particle system. For others, with just for special effects, you can use a default particle system. So it's difficult which part of this to put into the core. So I said, okay, this is something I'll try as an extension. So there is SX particle system, which uses the particle designer from 71 squared. I think this is the same one that is also supported by Cocos2D.
Yes.
And so there is just this, I think, two classes. You add them to your project, and then you've got it done. Yeah, there's no code of Sparrow you have to tweak or so. Just drop it onto your into your game, and you're done. Another great extension is the joystick or thumbstick. Which makes it easy to create a joystick in your game. What else is there? Some smaller stuff like a polygon, or a class that makes it easier to catch events like swipes or I don't know, shaking the iPhone, something like that. Then there's a progress bar, which is really I don't know, this is the first extension I wrote. I think it's about, 30 lines of code, so very simple. But it's a good way to get started. And I also encourage the people to put those extensions onto Git. There is a cool tool in GitHub called GIST or GIST, I don't know how it's pronounced. And this is some kind of way to just copy a code, paste it onto GitHub, and then you've got a small repository, and you can later even fork it if you want and make changes to it. So it's a very, very easy way to publish extensions.
Cool. Well, we were talking about differences from Sparrow to Cocos to D, there's one that's that strikes me as very obvious, and that's the documentation. You obviously spend a lot of time working on that, and you polished it, and it's clearly written, it's concise, and to the point, and with images, etc., etc. And if I compare this to the, well, shall I say, mess, that's the Cocos2D wiki with, well, I don't want to be too harsh, but there's stuff in there that's been outdated for at least a year, and there's just no one maintaining it. So this is looking very good for Sparrow, that this cool documentation here.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a good point.
Do you have any plans on writing a book about Sparrow, maybe?
I'd like to, but I guess it has to become more more widely used before this makes sense.
Do you have any? Okay. Do you have any info or statistics on how popular Sparrow is, or how popular it is compared to other game engines, maybe?
I can. What I can see is that we've got about 1,000 visitors, unique visitors on the homepage per day, and about 20 to 30 downloads of the framework. What I don't see is how many people are downloading it from GitHub. So how many people really access the repository there?
Probably not too many.
Yeah, probably. And what I also don't know is really how many games are out there, because you don't have to. I've got a list on the Sparrow Wiki where anybody can add his game. But of course, it's not compulsory that everybody does this. So I don't know. There are about 50 games or so on this list, but I don't know how many people really take the time to add their game to the list.
Of course.
So it's hard to say.
Yeah. The reason why I'm saying is that that not too many people branch from GitHub is if you look at Cocos2D and see it, there's just over 32 public forks of a very popular engine. You know, it's maybe they just click on download and get a new zip file, but then you should get the latest stable download from the website and not from GitHub. Well, so I guess it's not too many. You also take donations. How's that going for you?
Yeah, donations. Well, the button's there, but it's not used very frequently. I think I've earned about perhaps $600 on donations.
Over 2 years, 3 years?
Over 1.5 year.
One and a half years.
And I think about half of it was by one user. I was so thankful that I gave him support in the forum and had some special questions for me in the forum that he thought he had to spend a little more on donations. So you can't earn a lot of money from donations.
No. So. Have you ever considered, making a Sparrow commercial or adding some commercial products to it, or earning money in any other way?
I thought about different ways to get at least a little money in so that I can spend more time on it. But I never really found an idea that was promising enough for me to take it to the end. So one thing I thought was perhaps some commercial extensions. So I don't know, a very easy way to add physics to Sparrow or something like that. But at the moment, I think a more promising way to earn some money with it is to find to look for sponsors, to look for companies who say, okay, this is a cool project, and we'd like to use it for our games, but we need, I don't know, feature XYZ, and we pay you a little money to implement that feature into Sparrow. So I think this is something I will try to do in the future, to look out for such opportunities. And what I'd also like to do at some time is to sell the code of PangoFlip, the one game I created with Sparrow. Mm. Yeah, but I've never found the time to do it, to really yeah. clean up the code and make it usable.
I knew it. When you as a programmer, when you think of releasing a product and actually wanting the users to spend money on it, the first thing you think of is, oh God, I have to clean this up.
Yeah,
it has to
exactly.
be perfect code, and it's embarrassing if I ask for money for the crap I wrote. it's actually well, my tip is not to worry about this too much, because you'll end up cleaning up the code for a month, and most people will be happy if you just do the 80% stuff and remove all the ugly hacks or something like that, and that's okay.
You're right. This might really be a good point. Yeah, I could just put it on GitHub. I don't know, in a closed repository, so that you. I don't know if this is possible to get others to access it, and
for
then
paid accounts, yeah.
for paid accounts. Yeah, and just. Enhance it over time, but put it out quickly. Yeah, that might be a good idea. Yeah, I will think about that.
Would work.
You're right, because in the other way, it will really take months before I am finished and content with it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the documentation. As Stefan said, it's extremely detailed. If you go to the wiki.sparrow-framework.org. Then it's very detailed documentation, which is very nice.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it's the reason why it is that this way is because when you're the underdog under the frameworks, I think you just have to do it, because in Cocos2D, I think it's not that important, because there are so many people who blog about it and write tutorials on it, like Ray Wenderlich and you, Stefan, and so. It's not that important, but when you're like the Sparrow framework, not promoted by so many people, then you have to deal with that yourself and make sure that people find their way in the framework and can use it as quickly as possible. Mm. So I think that's why I spent so much time on that.
Actually, I beg to differ. I think it does matter for Cocos2D, and the fact that most people blog about Cocos2D is just the result of the documentation being, well, crap for the last past 3 years. And I guess it's been popular because it's free for the most part, and everyone can just download it, and just some time it got the critical mass. So it was a self-running thing, but you have other people actually writing about Cocos2D, because there's an information black hole on the website itself, and it's misleading, etc., and it's not as easy as you wish it would be explained. And so people started using it as a way to get traffic to their own websites. So basically the Cocos2D traffic is diverted all over the web, and you don't go looking for information. Or there's at least a 50% chance that a user who's using Cocos2D is not going to Cocos2D iPhone to look for information, but rather go to other places, read a book, etc., etc. So it's good that it's been so popular, but I think it could do more for its users and for improve the dedication of the users to Cocos2D if the documentation would be better, and if it would be the official documentation. That's good.
It's a good point. I never saw it that way, but makes sense. Perhaps another thing I just thought about is another advantage I think of Sparrow is that the community is small enough that anybody who has a question or has a comment is really heard, and at the same time it's big enough that you will always get an answer when you post something on the forum. So I think it sits there at a good point in the middle of being too small and too big. So I think this is something that relates to what you've just said. It's just yeah, a lot of information is found on the main page, because I try to update this as good as possible. But the stuff you don't find anywhere else, you can still go to the forum and have everything in one place.
So Daniel, I see a long feature list that you have, it, and I think you also added the particle system, which is awesome. So what are some future enhancements planned for the Sparrow framework?
So the current plan is as follows. I'd like to the current version of Sparrow is Sparrow 1.2, and there will be Sparrow 1.3 in the next months. So this will be a smaller release, which contains not a lot of new features, but bug fixes and smaller enhancements.
By the way, and I'm very thankful for making very simple version numbers, 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, and not like 0.99.5, release candidate 1.
Thanks, yeah. Yeah, I thought we started with 0.7, I guess, and after reaching 0.9, I thought, well, if I call it now 0.10, then it looks like it's just in its infancy, so I can't call it that way. And it's already being used in games, so I said, okay, let's call it 1.0. It doesn't matter anyway.
That's also a really, really, really stupid mistake of most programmers, I say. You release something to the public, and it's version 0.01, and you go on, and suddenly you are at 0.1, and basically everyone is using it as is, and it's a it's a good framework, it's a good library, it's okay. It should be version 1.0 because that's most of the content is already there, but still called 0.1 or 0.1.2.
That's what I think too.
That looks like software that's just started coming out of someone's brain and was just written down, and it's not very interesting.
There is software I'm using for years, like Inkscape. Inkscape is a good example. It's still 0.74. It's a great vector editor. I'm using it for all the graphics I'm making, and it's still not 1.0. I don't understand that, because it's a great program. Why not go 1.0?
I think just call it anything. Just don't call it Sparrow Framework forever. If you know what I mean, you know, it will take it will take them 13 years to release it.
that's right. Yeah.
You can also upgrade from Sparrow to what's the next biggest word? Chicken framework.
Chicken framework would be cool. Yeah, then our tagline on the homepage would also fit.
Yeah, rooster framework.
Now you can call me chicken.
Yeah, eagle framework.
Yeah, eagle framework, owl framework.
Pterodactyl framework. If you want to be like dinosaur style. Okay, we're drifting off, I guess.
Okay, so back to the topic. So this will be Sparrow 1.3, so it will be a small release. And after that, I will start working on Sparrow 2.0. This will be a greater change. The plan is the following. Sparrow 1.x will be there to support support devices with OpenGL ES 1.1 or 1.2, the one that's below 2.0. And Sparrow 2.x will support OpenGL ES 2. So this will break compatibility. I will change some things and make some internal things differently than I'm doing it now. And it will require iOS 4 or maybe even iOS 5. That depends. I'm not sure on that yet. And what this should allow me to do is to add great special effects to Sparrow, like the filters you've got in Flash, like drop shadow filters and blur filters or geometry filters that I don't know, push your 2D images in a 3D space and something like that. So this is something I'd like to do with Sparrow 2.0. And I hope to release this within this year. So I'll try to make this step as quickly as possible, because I think currently most of the games that are out there really, or most of the devices that are out there really support OpenGL ES 2. So I think there's no reason any longer to stick with the old OpenGL ES version. Yeah. And and if you want to, and if you want this, there's still OpenGL ES. There's still Sparrow 1.x available, so you can do it with that. So I think that's the Nero. These are the Nero plans of Sparrow. What I'd also like to do sometime in the future is to add support for Lua. So you've got a scripting engine. You can use iPhone WAX for that. I haven't tried it. But I think this would be possible, and I'd like to make an interface that's a little better.
Yeah. I have this VEX in COBOL 2D, and I tried real-time scripting with it. So basically, writing script functions, and they all go through VEX, which means through the Objective-C runtime. And it ends up running like if I run like 5 or 10 function calls per frame, I ended up having like 20 frames per second on an iPhone 3G. Okay. Mm-hmm. And 40 frames per second on an iPod Touch 4. So it was way too slow for real-time scripting.
That's really
So you can't go through the Objective-C runtime to translate or as a binding method. You have to write the actual Lua C functions and manipulate the Lua stack. Maybe good for a prototype, but it's not good for real-time scripting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not really on my roadmap. It's just an idea I'd like to follow to try it out. But if you say it's really performance-wise that critical, then perhaps I will drop it anyway after looking at it.
But you can use Lua, you shouldn't rely on VAX. I mean, VAX is comfortable, but it comes with a serious performance drawback at least for real-time games.
Yeah. I think I'll just have to evaluate it, and then it will. Then we will see how much work it is to get it integrated. Or if it isn't worth the effort. But there's another point. This is something that's exclusive now to the Cocos 2D podcast. I'm working on a port of Sparrow to another system with a huge company. I can't say much more than that right now because I'm still under an NDA, but it will be announced within the next 3 or 4 weeks. So
is it another mobile system or a desktop system? Probably mobile.
I can't even say that.
Don't say. Okay.
Saying that might give away too much already.
So I'm guessing it's Android, but
what I can say is it is multi-platform. And it's going to be another bird. So it won't be Sparrow framework for ABC, but it will be another bird.
Chicken framework, yeah, cool.
The chicken framework.
Hey, yeah. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
I guess you're getting paid for that job.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So basically, Cocos 2D developers getting hired by Singer. You working for another big company. I have to find something.
they didn't hire me yet. It's just a corporation. So they said they wanted to have it, and I said, okay, I'll try it.
Yeah,
and we'll see how this will turn out. But this is also why I said before, it might be a way to get sponsors for the framework, because I think other companies might be interested in something like that as well.
Yeah. And if you're really lucky, Adobe will come by and stop here. We have 20 million for you. We'll buy you.
I think I would consider that offer.
Yeah. But that would also mean, okay, we realized that our flash converter for iPhone sucks and we just need a real engine. That's probably not going to happen.
Well, we'll see.
Okay. Do you have any other questions?
I think that's pretty much it. We already asked about the games, the personal games that were developed using the Sparrow framework, and I just checked out the Find It 2. It looks pretty good. And on the page, actually, if we go to the Sparrow Framework website, there's a whole page dedicated to the Sparrow-powered games. There are Find It 2, Twins, Penguin Flip or Pengu Flip, and then some other games, actually. A lot of games developed using the Sparrow Framework. So it's awesome. The website is awesome. I love it. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. To be honest, I changed it after your first podcast because you, I think the first or second podcast you had about other frameworks, you said that you didn't find a list of games. So I revisited that part of the webpage and changed it so this is easier to find.
Oh, nice. Yeah, cool.
So thanks for the feedback.
You're welcome.
One small thing I'd like to add is I'd want to make a little advertisement because my friend Holger is just working on a game called Kabam. No, it's not a game. It's an app developed with Sparrow. It's called Kabam, and it's going to be awesome. You can take pictures, and you can make a small comic strip from the pictures. So it's going to be out within the next weeks. And check it out. It's really cool.
Cool. Nice.
I just Kabam. Have to put that in. Kabam. Kabam. Okay. Yeah.
Can you spell it?
K-A-B-A-A-M.
Okay.
It's already, a webpage is already online, kabam.cc.
Cool.
So I just had to do that.
Yeah, actually, I also have an advertisement, but it's for my game. that went online, I think on Friday. Yeah, it's called Mad Speeder. Speed and an ER Mad Speeder, and it's basically for kids. It's an educational games so that they can drive a car and then learn addition and subtraction. And it is available on the App Store, so you can download it. I'm looking at Kabam, and it looks pretty good actually. It's a funny you're creating like a comic with your picture. Yeah, it's nice.
Thanks. Yeah. Cool.
It's funny when I'm driving, I'm always just adding. One idiot, two idiots, three idiots, four idiots. Okay, well then I'll also add a shameless plug. I'll release Cobalt 2D into the wild, actually to my newsletter subscribers, on August 30th. August 30th. and I'll send out an email with instructions on how you can download. So if you're interested in the preview version, you can sign up or just wait another like 4 or 6 weeks or something like that, and I'll release the public version. And I'll also bring the website live in the next week.
Great. I'll sign up immediately.
Yeah, cool.
And we'll have a podcast actually dedicated to the whole Cobalt 2D framework, and Stefan can actually go into the details about his experience building it. Yeah,
we have to do that.
Cool.
Very good.
So I think that's pretty much it. Thanks, Daniel, for coming on the podcast and telling us about the awesome Sparrow framework.
It's me who's thanking you. Thanks for having me in the Cocos podcast. I know it's funny to have a non-Cocos framework in the podcast, so I'm really feeling honored to be the first one.
Cool. And thanks, Stefan, for joining us and helping us out. So that's pretty much it. And have a good day or night wherever you are.
Okay. You too.
Yep. Evening.
Evening. All right.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Good. Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Thank you.